will regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Great to have you with us once again, coming to you from the Commonwealth of Virginia. I wish I could say that I'm coming to you from the Second Amendment Sanctuary County of Prince Edward County, Virginia, but the vote in Prince Edward County is next week, December 17th. We did have a very busy Tuesday. We've got a busy Wednesday in store for votes all across the state of Virginia. 18 counties on Tuesday. I'm sorry, 18 counties and cities in Virginia on Tuesday adopting Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. I actually have an email from Dan up in Northern Virginia, Prince William County, who is at the Board of Supervisors meeting. We're going to get to that here in just a few minutes, as well as our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report. But I want to welcome to the program from the road today, by the way. I appreciate Jim Wallace taking a little bit of time out to talk with us from the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts. Jim was on the program last week talking about a bill that had just been introduced that dealt with screening patients for gun ownership and then providing counseling for those who, you know, quote unquote, test positive for keeping and bearing arms. We were a little confused and a little puzzled by this bill. Is this really as bad and as weird as it sounds? Well, Tuesday, there was a hearing in Massachusetts on this very same piece of legislation. Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League was in attendance trying to get some answers. He had some questions of his own as well. And he joins us to talk about this bizarre bill in Massachusetts that wants to treat your gun ownership as a public health crisis. Take a look and a listen. Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts, thank you once again, sir, for coming back on the program.
Absolutely, Cam. Welcome back to the Second Amendment Battleground State.
And it is a fight right now. So we had you on the program yesterday or last week talking about this bill that had just been introduced in Massachusetts, talking about screening patients for gun ownership and providing counseling for those who basically, you know, tested positive for owning a gun. This bill had a hearing yesterday, and I know that you were in attendance. Is the bill as crazy and as bad as we thought that it was?
Well, the problem is we went to the hearing, not only to testify, but to actually see if we could get some questions answered. Because the last time you and I talked, there was a lot of we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, what we wanted to hear from is the people who were supporting the bill to see if we could get some of these questions answered. Now, the sponsor of the bill couldn't make the hearing, and, you know, that happened. I don't think he was ducking anybody. But there were a couple of doctors there supporting the bill, and the doctors actually work for the city of Boston under their Department of Public Health. So they were kind of the people we were hoping to get a lot of answers from. And the thanks to the committee, they actually asked a lot of pertinent questions. And unfortunately, what we found out was, first of all, you mentioned, the last time we talked, the director was supposed to put in place this program. And they were asked, what director? Who's the director that's supposed to do this? And the doctors didn't know. They were asked, okay, well, who's actually going to be facilitating this program? Well, we don't know. Okay. Well, who's going to do the training for the doctors who are going to be asking the questions? Well, we'd like to work with the committee to determine that. And it just went on and on and on. They couldn't tell us, you know, what the information or how it was going to be used or who was going to be able to collect this data, how the counseling was going to be done. So basically, they not only didn't have any answers, they actually caused more questions than when we went in. So it's just absolutely crazy.
Do you get the sense that they are talking about a really broad program that basically would encompass, you know, every Massachusetts resident who goes to their doctor, they'd be questioned about their gun ownership? Is that the intent, or do we not even know that?
Well, actually, there was a rep who asked, because her concern wasn't our concern. She was concerned about healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked these two doctors specifically, who do you foresee asking these questions? And she went through, you know, just a few. Do you think it's their primary care? Do you think it's emergency care? And she said, hey, when I go to a pediatrician, I see the assistant, I see the maybe the physician's assistant, the tech, and then I see the doctor. She said, who do you foresee asking these questions? And the doctor testifying said, we would like them all to be asking these questions. So if you go to the doctor's office, you might be asked that question three times by three different people. So, and again, she said, well, what are you going to do with this information, now that you have it? And they didn't have any answers.
Uh-huh. Okay. It is fascinating because I've seen a couple of news reports that indicated there are some lawmakers who say they support this measure, even though, again, there are all of these questions, including, I think one of the questions that came up yesterday, Jim, patient privacy. I mean, if you are supposed to inform your doctor that you're a gun owner and they're going to be collecting this information, I have to say, as a patient, I would not be complying with those doctor's questions. I'd not be answering those questions. But how on earth could we be sure that this information is going to remain between you and your doctor?
You can't. And what was interesting was the Senate chairwoman, pretty much when I had wrapped up my testimony, made an announcement to the room. She said, I want to make it very clear to everybody in the room that this is not an anti-Second Amendment bill. I just want to make that clear for everybody. And I said, Madam Chair, with all due respect, how can you possibly say that when it's already happening that doctors are reporting to the police because they don't like guns that, my patient shouldn't have a gun? It's already happening. So how can you possibly say that? And she said, and I love the term she used, then we'll just have to gently agree to disagree. And it's like, what facts do you have to back up? Because you don't even know what this bill's going to do yet.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
It was very interesting. But you touched on the doctor part, and there were three ladies there from the D.C. Project, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see that they were there.
Yeah. And they testified that we want to be more open with our doctors, not less. And you're basically putting us in a position of not being open with our doctors. Because what if my doctor doesn't like guns? What if, they're anti-Second Amendment and they don't believe women should have guns? You're putting me in a position of not being honest with my doctor, and that's not what we want to see.
Well, and this is one of the problems, I think, with treating gun ownership as a public health crisis, right? Not even treating, quote-unquote gun violence, but gun ownership as a public health issue. And you're right. I think that, I think you and I talked about this last week. I mean, I where I live, my primary care physician is a gun owner. My dentist is a gun owner. Every medical professional I deal with is a gun owner. And we have these conversations, but they're not trying to lecture me about my gun ownership. We're talking about the last gun that we bought or the last time we went out shooting or how hunting season's going. And that's a very different thing than I think if you live in, a big city or an anti-gun suburb. And again, you walk in kind of knowing that, all right, odds are my doctor does not support a gun ownership. And then they start quizzing you about your potential gun ownership. Absolutely, I think that's going to cause patients to shut down. And really, I think it will impact the doctor-patient relationship. So yesterday was a committee hearing. Was there any vote taken on this bill?
Oh, no. They never take votes at the hearings.
Okay.
It was a hearing about a whole lot of other bills before public health. And it was interesting to see some of the other bills had nothing to do with gun ownership or anything. But some of it had to do with adoption. Some of it had to do with treating HIV situations. And I was listening carefully to some of that testimony because the people testifying and also some of the committee people asking questions were very concerned about, are people trained to know how to talk to people in these specific instances? And I said, you know what? That is a great point. And when I testified, I said, hearing the doctors testifying and reading this bill, I can tell you absolutely positively that the people who are purporting to try to help us have no clue how to talk to us. And I said, I was thinking about how I was going to explain to the committee how bad this bill is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the biggest evidence of how bad the bill is the bill itself. Because if you're truly trying to help us, you already lost us just by writing this one paragraph.
What was the response?
And the response was interesting because they had to acknowledge that they had no idea how to talk to gun owners. And that was a lot of that hearing throughout the day was, do you know how to talk to the people you're trying to help? And, I mean, they had nowhere to go at that point because they know they were lost.
So do you have any idea of you know, how lawmakers are viewing this bill? Do you think that it's got a chance of actually, you know, getting out of committee and maybe even getting to the governor's desk?
Well, you have no idea. I mean, Massachusetts is such a fickle place, you know. They can get on a trend and push something through within a matter of days if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's good stuff, it takes forever. If it's bad stuff, it takes a blink of an eye to happen. So you never want to say never because, you know, they have, unfortunately, the backing of the physicians. They have the backing of the medical community,
yeah,
which they shouldn't. But, you know, it's just one of those things where we have to watch everything because you never know what's going to pop out.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, I wanted to ask you, are you keeping your eye on any other bad bills that we've seen introduced for the 2020 session there in Massachusetts?
Well, the interesting thing is the moms approached me last summer about a data gathering bill that they are really trying to push. It seems to be their priority about gun crime data tracing. And I said, yeah, I'll take a look at it because there's a lot of things we want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I approached when I looked at the bill. And I had to educate people on gun crimes crime guns is actually the term, because most people don't know this, that if you're taking the data from the ATF, there's an incredible problem because all guns traced by the ATF, regardless of reason, are all considered crime guns. And somewhere between 60 and 80% of the guns on an annual basis that are traced were never used in a crime. They were just traced to determine ownership by police. So all of that data is skewed. But I also made a whole long list of all the things we want to know. Like, for instance, if a crime is committed with a gun, is it legally owned? You know, how did this person get it?
Mm-hmm.
So all that would show us in a much better light. And when I went back to the senator who's sponsoring the bill and said, you know what, we can work with you on this because we want to know all of this information. And it was almost as if the same people who asked me to look at it then said, oh boy, Jim actually likes this. There must be something wrong with it. So they've hesitated now for almost 6 months about coming forward and saying, yeah, all your ideas are good or all your ideas are bad. Now they just don't even want to comment on it. So it's kind of interesting.
That is fascinating. You know, but again, I mean, it goes back to the idea, unfortunately, I think that for many of these folks, it's not about knowing more. It's not about collecting data with an open mind. They've got their mind made up and they want to collect data so they can cherry pick data points and go after legal gun owners.
Well, that's it. I mean, when I originally looked at the bill, I asked them, I said, what do you want to do with this information once you have it?
Mm-hmm.
They really didn't have an answer. And I said, well, I mean, we already know the gun laws aren't working here, but you continually say they are, despite the numbers from the government. And so when you get this data, what are you going to do with it? And they really don't have an answer. So it's kind of interesting because even yesterday, you know, when they talked about gun safety, I testified before the committee that, you know, there are people in the room here, maybe some on the committee that are interested in safety, but the state as a whole is not at all. And I had to tell the committee, the state collects about $2 to $3 million a year in license fees. And since I've been around, has not spent a single penny on firearm safety education. And to point it out even further, back in 2014, when we all worked together to pass that big bill, We actually put into law that the state police had to do public service announcements on safe storage and transportation and the importance of getting training and how to get it. 5 years later, no PSAs. So tell me the state's interested in firearm safety. It's not.
No.
It's all window dressing.
They're interested in gun control, not gun safety.
Right.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jim, I appreciate the update. I'm so glad you could make it out of that hearing yesterday. Again, it's fantastic news that there are women from the D.C. Project there and other Second Amendment supporters because, you know, again, I know in that Second Amendment battleground state, it could be tough sometimes to get folks motivated to show up for these hearings. But I'm glad that the voices of gun owners were represented yesterday.
Absolutely. It was good to see them.
Absolutely. And good talking with you as well, Jim. Thanks for everything you do there in Massachusetts. And we'll be talking again very soon.
I'm afraid we will.
You know it, Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League right here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. And there is always something going on in Massachusetts. And there's, sadly, I think, always going to be something going on in Virginia here, at least for the next couple of years till our next election cycle. Right now, what's going on in the state of Virginia are the overwhelming number of counties and towns around the state that are passing Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. 18 new counties and cities joining the 59 that were already in place. So we now have 77 counties and cities across the state of Virginia that have declared themselves to be Second Amendment sanctuaries. We have more coming up for a vote today. We got more coming up next week. So this wave has not subsided yet. By the time it does, the vast majority of the state, I believe, is going to be a Second Amendment sanctuary community. I was in Cumberland County, Virginia, on Tuesday night, which is a neighboring county of Prince Edward, where Farmville, Virginia, is located, where we do Bearing Arms, Cam and Company from. It's a pretty small county. It's about 10,000 people. And as I was driving in, I know this area very well. Tuesday night, the Mexican restaurant in town does Taco Tuesday. It is packed. It is always packed. It was not packed last night. That was my first inkling that, oh, I wonder if everybody's at the meeting, because there is a half-empty parking lot. You drive a little bit further down, great pizza place in Cumberland, Virginia, called Vito's. I thought it was closed, but the open sign was on. There just were no cars in the parking lot. And again, this was at like 6:30 at night. And that's when I thought to myself, okay, how many people are actually going to be there? When I pulled into Central Elementary School, which is where, or Cumberland Elementary School, which is where the meeting was held last night, I was a little late. I normally like to get there about 45 minutes before the meeting begins. This was closer to about 10 minutes before the meeting began. Every parking space in that elementary school parking lot was full. There were cars parked out on the street. I had to park probably about a third of a mile away and then walk over there. I'm really bad at estimating crowd sizes. I will tell you that. But I can tell you that the cafeteria, which is where this meeting was being held, the cafetorium, I should say. Gotta love the cafetoriums, don't you? It was standing room only. There were at least 600 people in that room, and there were more crowded into the hallway outside, you know, straining to hear what was going on. It was a massive turnout for a county of about 10,000 people, and Cumberland County commissioners unanimously approving that Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. In Prince William County, Northern Virginia, the vote was 6-2. On Tuesday night, in favor of a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. And in attendance, Dan and his wife, Dan wrote in last night, actually early this morning, I guess after Dan woke up, because it was a late night for him. He said, I want to thank you for highlighting the two-way sanctuary movement here in Virginia on your show. My wife and I attended our first ever County Board of Supervisors meeting last night in Prince William County, Virginia. We were probably not the only ones that was true for either. The turnout was incredible. People care about these issues, even up here in this part of the state. Estimate of the crowd was over 1,000. Despite a miserable cold rain, atrocious D.C. area rush hour traffic, many parking lots were already full when we arrived 15 minutes before the meeting last night. He says when they reached the 2A sanctuary discussion portion of the meeting, about an hour and a half in, that's kind of amazing they made folks wait an hour and a half before they started talking about it. He says the scene was vastly different from the one that mainstream media liked to portray. Sure, there are plenty of middle-aged dudes voicing their support for the right to keep and bear arms. He says, however, the speakers in the crowd in attendance were anything but homogenous. We heard from veterans, law enforcement, elderly grandmothers, domestic abuse victims, people who got out of Venezuela, Russia, and a person whose family survived the Holocaust. Many races and religions were represented. He says, we heard from two candidates running for the U.S. Senate in Virginia next year, as well as the owner-manager of Elite Shooting Sports in Manassas. He informed the crowd that during the 5 years of operation, they've seen 160,000 people walk through their doors. That would equate to 30% of the population of the county if they were all county residents. Dan says the meeting started at 7:30. We stayed until 11:15, usually past our bedtime on a work night. Speakers were called up in groups of five, and they were still going strong when we left. They heard from everyone who wanted to speak, and they took the vote at 12:30 in the morning. And again, that vote passed 6-2. Dan says, yes, this new incoming board in Prince William County plans to overturn this resolution when they take control in January. But at least they will do so, knowing they have stirred up a hornet's nest and that there are a lot of county residents who plan to vote on 2A issues in future elections. Dan, first of all, thank you for attending. Thank you for writing and letting me know how it went there. And I got to tell you, listen, for the 1,000-plus folks who showed up in Prince William County last night, every one of you needs to be at that first County Board of Supervisors meeting in January where the new board is sworn in and where they say they're going to undo this resolution. Because I want every member of that Board of Supervisors to look gun owners in the eye and say, you know what, we're okay with enforcing unconstitutional gun control laws. And it sounds like that's exactly what they're going to do. So we need just as strong a turnout for that meeting as what you all were able to produce in Prince William County on Tuesday night. But congratulations on the vote. Congratulations on the turnout, Dan. And thank you again for being a part of it and for sharing your perspective here on Bearing Arms Cam and Company. By the way, if you would like to share your perspective as well, questions, comments, whatever, we're going to do another all-email Bearing Arms Cam and Company on Friday of this week. So if you got anything you want to ask me about, or you've got something that's been weighing on your mind that you want to let me know about, the email address is cam.edwards@bearingarms.com, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. And again, just make sure that you get those emails into me by Friday morning, and we will get to as many of them as we possibly can on Friday's show. Right now, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, as well as our recidivism report. We'll actually start there with a story out of Providence, Rhode Island, where a Providence man involved in a police shooting appeared in court. Channel 10, WJAR in Providence, says 28-year-old Anthony McKinney was pulled over, or the officers tried to pull him over, for not wearing a seatbelt Saturday morning. Rhode Island State Police Detective Ryan Santos said in court as the officer approached the suspect's vehicle, the operator, later identified as the defendant, Anthony McKinney, accelerated to the left and attempted to flee the location. Mm-hmm. Authorities say McKinney continued to drive away where he ended up hitting another car and then kept going. Santos says, quote, the officer approached the vehicle on foot, found himself positioned in front of the suspect's vehicle. I was informed the defendant attempted to drive forward in the direction of the officer, at which time the officer fired one round of his service weapon into the front window of the suspect's vehicle, at which time the vehicle stopped. McKinney's also accused of reckless driving, leaving the scene of an accident. Police say he has a lengthy criminal history, including a 2011 conviction for armed robbery, for which he received a 15-year sentence. And yet, he was released from prison earlier this year. That's right. So a 15-year sentence became an 8-year sentence, basically cut in half, probably 7.5 years. A warrant was already out for his arrest in Providence for an alleged assault. McKinney is due back in court later this month. Apparently, he's bonded out. He's back out on the streets, maybe even behind the wheel on these streets of Providence. So be careful, Rhode Islanders, when you hit the roadways. Our armed citizen story of the day from Dallas, Texas, also involves somebody behind the wheel, but in this case, an armed citizen, a pizza delivery driver, shooting and killing a suspect who tried to rob him in Dallas, Texas. You know, these stories, I got to say, I have a... I always appreciate every armed citizen story that we find, somebody, protecting themselves or others with their lawfully owned firearm. But I have a real soft spot for delivery drivers just because it's a dangerous job. And sadly, until very recently, a lot of the major chains barred their drivers from carrying. Even if they were concealed carry holders, they could not carry while they were in their own car delivering pizzas. Thankfully, over the last couple of years, most of the major companies have actually quietly shifted away from that. Now, down in Dallas, Texas, this happened Tuesday night around 10 p.m. According to police, three individuals allegedly tried to rob this driver But the driver was armed, shot at them to fend them off. Police said two of the suspects were shot. One of them died from their injuries, the other in critical condition. Delivery driver was not injured. Police continue to investigate. They haven't said what charges will be filed for this incident. I would be shocked if the delivery driver is actually facing any charges here. And as CBS in Dallas notes, this is actually the second time this week that a delivery driver in the city was assaulted. On Monday, a delivery driver was shot five times while dropping off food at the Pearl at Midtown Apartments in Northeast Dallas. A suspect was arrested at the scene. The driver is expected to survive. But again, that incident is why so many delivery drivers do carry, even if it's in violation of their company policy. Because they'd rather look for another job than not go home at the end of their shift. And I'm glad that delivery driver in Dallas, Texas, is alive and well, and we'll keep our eyes open for any more follow-ups to that story. Our good deed of the day from Georgia, Lilburn, Georgia. Check out this a Facebook post. A Georgia traffic officer helping out a mom in traffic court on Monday. Fox 5 in Atlanta says the department says a mom was in court with her baby when her infant became fussy. She took the child outside the court. But when it was her turn to see the judge, baby was still kind of fussing. And that's when Officer Nichelle Moore said that she would step in. She stayed with the child, even stepping in to give the baby a bottle, according to Fox 5 in Atlanta. The police department there in Lilburn, Georgia says when you have traffic court but your baby is hungry, no worries, we got you. Well, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to help out a frazzled mom and a hungry baby, Officer Nichelle Moore of the Lilburn, Georgia Police Department. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is all the time that we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Thank you again for being a part of the program today. I will be in Fluvanna County, Virginia, tonight for the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors meeting and the vote on a Second Amendment sanctuary. They've moved this meeting from the normal location to the local elementary school in order to accommodate the expected crowd. So we'll have a full report on tomorrow's Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Also, Rob O'Donnell with Brothers Before Others going to join us on tomorrow's show as well, talking about that shootout in Jersey City, as well as a police officer in Pennsylvania shot on Tuesday. In the meantime, don't forget, you can subscribe to Bearing Arms, Cam & Company at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page, as well as Town Hall Media on YouTube. And don't forget, again, if you got any questions or comments, email me, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.